Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
This is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing in iTunes to the podcast. Of course, we're brought to you each week by Lake of the Woods Tourism, and we talk to Joe Henry to find out the latest on that big lake to the north. And of course, people are still up there fishing, and fishing is really good on the lake, but a lot of people, Joe, are starting to focus on that river that flows into Lake of the Woods right now, the Rainy River, because that's about to get real exciting up there, isn't it?
I think a lot of people are coaxing walleyes up on their Vexilars on the ice, thinking about that Rainy popping open. I mean, I think there's a lot going on, but yes, you know, that right now that open water is about, you know, every day it's more and more, but right about now it's about 6 miles to the east of Birchdale. So it's coming. And, you know, it's amazing how Mother Nature works. I mean, it's not like we've had rain or anything like that, but hey, the longer days, the sun angle. I mean, just things are happening with Mother Nature. We can tell, and that water's creeping our way.
And it's almost a rite of passage. If you grew up fishing in Minnesota, you almost have to fish the Rainy River in the spring. And part of it is because of those the sturgeon that are up there. But a lot of people like to go after those giant walleyes, and they can do that what until April 14th?
Yeah, through April 14th. And you know, you're right, Brad. I mean, you know, yeah, people go up sturgeon fishing, but really the sturgeon anglers, They're going to wait until that ice is cleared out a little bit more typically. It's the walleye anglers that are really, really trying to get on that open water stretch. And, you know, the reason for it is because there is a huge portion of walleyes that live in that great big open water of Lake of the Woods called Big Traverse Bay. And there's a very, you know, there's a good percentage of them, not all of them, but there's a good percentage of them that do their spawning ritual up the Rainy River. So what happens is you have all of these walleyes, hundreds of thousands of walleyes. You have a lot of huge walleyes, trophy class walleyes, and now all of a sudden they're all constricted in the same small river. So you know, when they're running, when they're moving, you got a lot of big fish in one small area, and those fish are eating. So that's also why, you know, the DNR says, hey, we're going to allow an open season through April 14th. It's ice cold water. The water isn't real deep. Most anglers are jig fishing, which is very low mortality. And they say, hey, you can keep two fish under 19 and a half for the fry pan per day, but nothing over 28 like you can throughout the year. That way, we're letting all those breeders go back.
Yeah, and you know, most people you talk to nowadays, they want to catch that 30-inch walleye or that trophy-sized walleye and take a picture, put it back, maybe make a replica if you want, or go up and try to beat it again next year.
It's exactly right. Most people are just fine with that. And it's about the picture. And you know, it's even gotten easier that way with all of our smartphones and things. You can get a really high quality image, you know, take a few shots right off the bat, pop, 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 and make sure you get a good one and get that big girl back so she can go do her deal.
Yeah. You know, it used to be you had to put it on the wall to show off to your friends to prove it. You know,
yeah.
If you didn't get a picture, it didn't happen. And back then, you know, you didn't have camera phones or anything like that. So you almost had to mount it to prove it. But nowadays you can just get that picture and you get a real big one, a real nice one. You can get that replica made and preserve it forever. So Joe Henry, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about the Rainy River and Lake of the Woods. And if people want to follow along even more closely with the river as it opens up, they can do that on your website and Facebook page.
Exactly, yeah. You know, we keep pretty up to speed on our Facebook page. Lake of the Woods Tourism is the name of it. And, you know, the other thing is on our website, we actually have an open water line that we change every single day. We really keep tabs on it this time of year. And, you know, anglers are watching, like you said, you know, people are ready to hook their boats up and go, and it's going to be the first time they splash their boat all year long. And it is, it's a tradition. It's rite of spring. It's rite of passage for walleye anglers. And I'll tell you what, if you hit it right, which, you know, this is the kind of time of year that you can, if you hit it right, you could have 100 fish day. You could have 10 fish over 28. I mean, those stories are not that uncommon.
And this is one of those years. Now, you have to have your houses off Lake of the Woods by what, the end of the month, March 31st?
Yep.
But this is one of those years where you'll probably be able to ice fish while people are open water fishing on the river.
Oh, there's no doubt. Absolutely. And in fact, you know, you got to have fish houses off March 31st, you know, overnight fish houses. But I'll tell you what, there's going to be a lot of pike angling and walleye angling on the ice yet for people that are going out on ATVs and snow machines and that sort of thing. And, you know, just because houses have to be off doesn't mean the fish quit eating. And those fish are only going to increase their activity, their feeding activity. And, you know, it normally becomes even better as time goes on. And of course, you know what, we all say this, but whether you're on that river or whether you're a fish on that ice, it's safety first. You know, you know what you're doing. Go out with an outfitter through a resort road. You know, make sure you're following the rules, listening to where they're telling you to go and not to go, making sure you have a partner with you, making sure you have ice picks. You know, if you're going out in the rainy river and you're pushing your boat over some shoreline ice, but make sure you got life jackets on, make sure you got ropes with you, make sure you have a knife with you so that if you're anchored up and an ice chunk comes and hits your anchor rope, you can cut that anchor rope. Make sure that you are prepared. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to be caught by surprise. You want to make sure you think this thing through.
And, you know, border waters have different regulations. Of course, you guys can catch your walleyes up there till April 14th. We've been talking about on the river. Is that the same for the lake then? You have to quit catching walleyes after April 14th on Lake of the Woods?
Yeah, it's the same thing. April 14th. Yep.
And is it is the limit on how many you can keep different out there on the lake?
It is different on the lake. Yeah. You know, so for the ice fishing season, you can keep a combined limit of 8 fish up to up to 4 of those can be walleyes. Now, when we get into April, I believe the regulations change so that you can keep your 6 fish, which is a summer limit on the lake. So what I always advise is that, you know, it's good when you're fishing border waters up at Lake of the Woods to take a look at the rules.
Sure.
You know, the rules change based on whether you're fishing the Rainy River in 4 Mile Bay versus the lake. The rules change with slot limits. You know, on the river, you can only keep your two eaters in the spring fishing season under 19 and a half. You can't keep anything bigger than that. I mean, it's just good to take a quick review before you come up, because when it's all said and done, you know what, as an angler, we're responsible for what we're keeping and what we're doing. You know, I'd say this too, when you're fishing the river, you know, halfway across that Rainy River is Canada. So, you know, if you're going to be fishing in Canadian waters, you can't have any alcohol on board. You know, you can't have any live minnows or live bait. You know, I mean, you need to know the rules. You have to have an Ontario fishing license. I mean, so most people stick to the U.S. side, which is no big deal. There's plenty of water to fish on the Minnesota side. But just know where you are, know what you're doing.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Lake of the Woods Tourism, talking about Lake of the Woods and the Rainy River, of course. And if people are out there on the lake ice fishing, and they got to get their houses off the lake here by March 31st, inevitably, as it is this time of year, you've been out on the ice for a long time. There's probably the snow around your house and the ice around your house probably looks like you've been there for a while. You're always encouraging people not to let that trash fall through the ice when it melts, but to pick it up and pack it out.
You know, we have a group that we formed about 5 years ago called Keep It Clean. And it's made up of a group of stakeholders around the Lake of the Woods area. And, you know, basically our whole mantra is to educate, create awareness, enforcement, and also provide some facilities for trash removal from the ice. The way this group started was there's a group called the Friends of Zippo Bay State Park. In 1 year, the wind was blown in from the north as the ice went out, and they hauled like 4 trailer loads of garbage. Yikes. From ice anglers off those beaches. And the thought was, hey, if the wind was just right for this to happen, that was one small part of the lake. What if there's that much garbage that blew in just because conditions were right? What's going on the rest of the lake? So we created a whole campaign and such with Keep It Clean to make sure that anglers are trying to do the right, that are doing the right thing. We're reminding people, we're working with our local DNR enforcement officers to make sure if you see any activity where people are leaving trash behind, that warrants a ticket. You know, we don't want that on our lake. And since we've done that, Brett, we've literally have dumpsters in 7 different locations around the lake that ice anglers can use to dump their trash. And we've hauled away literally tons and tons and tons and tons of garbage. Now, very aware that a lot of that garbage would have been taken home otherwise and such. But, you know, the way we look at it is, if just a small percentage of that garbage would have ended up in our lake, it's a win, you know, for the program. But, you know, the big thing is it's about self-policing. You know, police yourself, make sure you take an extra walk around where your area is to see if there's any boards laying around or any garbage or whatever the case might be. You know, the other thing too is, there's some people that don't care. Help those guys and gals out. You know what? It's the natural resource that ultimately pays the price. There's some people that, you know, maybe a couple pieces of wood bounces off a trailer or falls out of a fish house when they're pulling it off the ice and they didn't even know it. The bottom line is, you know, try to do the right thing as outdoors people and let's all work together. And usually the law of reciprocity kicks in, and you know what? Somehow, some way down the road, you're going to get rewarded for your good efforts.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking Lake of the Woods. And you mentioned Lake of the Woods stakeholders and the DNR, and you hear about some of the people that are involved with an area like that where it's vital to the economy. There's a lot of businesses that are a part of it. It's a giant resource that a lot of people participate in, I guess. Maybe that's not the right way to say it, but when it comes to managing a resource like that, you're a part of a stakeholder group, right, that gets to talk about possible changes. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, you know, when we talk about things like this, this is a group that we formed and out of concern. And, you know, basically, I don't want to miss anybody, but it's you know, Lake of the Woods Tourism. It's Lake of the Woods Soil and Water Conservation District, Roseau County Soil and Water. It's DNR Fisheries, DNR Enforcement, Friends of Zippo Bay State Park. Gosh, I hope I'm not missing anybody. Lake of the Woods County Commissioner Ed Arneson. So we have a whole wide array of people on the representing different, you know, groups and in the committee. And, you know, it's really just, you know, we have a big lake. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of people accessing the ice. And, you know, it's a tough situation because, you know, we provide these dumpsters and we have to raise money for the hauling of the garbage from these dumpsters. And, you know, part of it, should we be doing that? Part of it, are we setting a precedent? What's the net result? I think the net result is ultimately good. We're getting less garbage going back into the lake. But at the same time, you can see where the different challenges come in.
Right. Now, so do you see, do you guys meet yearly? Do you meet every couple of years? And do you foresee any potential changes, or would you like to see any potential changes for the lake?
You know, we meet about probably every couple of months. And some people join via conference call and some people are in person. And, you know, we talk about, we not only do the keep it clean, but we've also combined this group into the AIS, or the Aquatic Invasive Species group around the lake. And we help talk about, you know, what we want to do to bring awareness and education and enforcement to the AIS challenges. So, yeah, what changes do we see? Well, you know what, as we're hauling more and more tons of garbage away with this program, it's going to be challenging to keeping up with it financially, because there's just so much more garbage that gets accumulated each and every year. And, you know, should this be something that this private stakeholder group does? Is this something that's more of a public problem where there should be public monies used for this? Is this something that we should, you know, pull away the precedent of dumpsters and let people just take garbage off on their own and really enforce and educate that they do the right thing? I mean, there's a number of ways we could go with this. And they're all, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. We're creating this as we go. It's just, you know, when you think about it, when it's all said and done, the goal is to make people more aware, to get people to change their behavior, and also to ultimately keep the garbage out of the lake. And with thousands and thousands and thousands of ice anglers and things freezing into the ice, and some people are very responsible, some people are don't care. You get everybody, and it makes it challenging.
Do you think, do you guys deal with, excuse me, even things such as limit changes and things like that? And with all the talk about Minnesota going to a statewide 4-fish limit and how that might affect how Lake of the Woods is managed?
So, you know, there's a couple different groups. So the Keep It Clean AIS group is dealing with the trash and the challenges and the awareness and things like that. Now, there's a separate group going on up at Lake of the Woods right now that the DNR has put together, and it's more of a Lake of the Woods input group. And, you know, I'm part of that. You might have heard of the Mille Lacs input group, and I think they're trying to create some different groups throughout the state on big walleye waters. And, you know, basically that's the group where we have a number of different stakeholders working together to, you know, we get information presented to us from DNR, and then we also have an opportunity to respond and to give input. And ultimately what they want to do is they want to get a good handle on where different stakeholders are in regards to the fishery, so that when they take a look at other rule changes and fish limits and things down the road, which there's no indication that anything's going to change. However, they do take a look at it every number of years. And they want input. They at least want to know where key stakeholders in the area are coming from.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking Lake of the Woods for just a couple of more minutes here. Northwest Sports Show this weekend in Minneapolis, Joe. A lot of resorts from Lake of the Woods down there, I'm sure.
There are, yeah. You know, Lake of the Woods Tourism won't be at this one simply because we have enough resorts covering this one. But we have a whole bunch of Lake of the Woods resorts there. And you know what? The Northwest Show is a big show in Minneapolis. And, you know, it's a cool opportunity to go talk to your to different Lake of the Woods resorts. You know, every resort has a different ambiance to it. They got different amenities. Some are more mom-pa. Some are very nice. Some have old lodging and new lodging because they've torn down their old cabins and put up new cabins. I mean, it's just nice to see, hey, what's this person who owns this resort all about? What kind of rates do they have? Do they have any specials going on at the show? And, you know, if I want to go to Lake of the Woods fishing based on who I'm coming with and what I want to fish for, you know, when would be the best time? It's a very nice way to be intimate with a resort owner who lives and breathes Lake of the Woods fishing. At the same time, man, all the different tackle opportunities, the electronics. There's different seminar speakers going on talking about different aspects of fishing in Minnesota. I mean, there's a lot happening this weekend at that Northwest Sports Show.
All right. Well, Northwest Sports Show, people can go there and find out more about some of the resorts. But there's also a one-stop shop where they don't have to leave the house and they can find out more information about what's going on at Lake of the Woods. Right, Joe?
That's it. You know, it's our website. And folks want to find out more, check out our website. It's Lake of the Woods. LakeOfTheWoodsMN.com.
Joe Henry, Lake of the Woods, thanks for being on Sporting Journal
Radio.
No
matter how cold,
thank you very
much. No matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today.
Waterfowl hunters.
If you haven't experienced the heart-pounding excitement of the spring snow goose season,
you haven't seen the most thrilling waterfowl action possible.
Take that plug out of your gun and chase snows with Mid-Migration Outfitters.
Plus, you'll get to see the spring waterfowl migration up close and personal.
Hunts take place from mid-February through April. Now is the time to reserve your time in the blind.
Visit MidMigrationOutfitters.com for more.
That's MidMigrationOutfitters.com.
The ice is strong and the bite is on. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world. Welcome to Lake of the Woods. With over 50 resorts and motels to stay at, Lake of the Woods is a winter destination trip that deserves to be on every angler's list. Bring the family too. Book a fully guided trip in a heated fish house or do it yourself. Don't leave the snowmobiles at home either. The Lake of the Woods area offers hundreds of miles of groomed trails to spend the day on. Come visit the walleye capital of the world. Come visit Lake of the Woods. Plan your trip at LakeOfTheWoodsMN.com. That's LakeOfTheWoodsMN.com.
Well, we got a new episode of Prairie Sportsman coming up Sunday, March 25th on Pioneer Public Television. So check your local guide. Just search for Prairie Sportsman on your local guide. Now, there are some other TV providers out there, some of the other public TV stations around the state of Minnesota and even Fargo that are going to be carrying the show or are carrying the show. Follow along with the latest episodes at prairiesportsman.org or see what we've got coming up on the Prairie Sportsman Facebook page, Prairie Sportsman on Instagram. Check it out, prairiesportsman.org. New episode coming up Sunday, March 25th. And it's something a little bit different. We went and actually checked out some fat bike trails. If you've never done this, it's kind of cool because it allows you to get away. Like, we went down to the Minnesota River Bottoms. It's a wildlife refuge. And saw all kinds of wildlife and actually biked through the woods down there. And you're right next to the Twin Cities, which I usually try to, I'll be honest, I usually try to stay out of the city as much as possible. But we were pretty close to it, yet we were able to get out of the city. So it's pretty interesting. It's a little wildlife oasis near the Twin Cities metro area. And we'll feature that coming up on Sunday, March 25th. Search your guide for Prairie Sportsman.
March 31st marks the expiration of 2017-2018 hunting and fishing licenses in North Dakota. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. North Dakota anglers, trappers, and hunters are reminded that new licenses for the 2018-2019 seasons are required starting April 1st. Licenses can be purchased online at the Game and Fish Department website, gf.nd.gov. Once the license is processed, users will have the option to print the hard copy and or download the license to a smartphone or mobile device, which is helpful when asked to show proof of license while hunting or fishing in rural areas that lack cellular service. Licenses can also be purchased at more than 140 vendor locations throughout the state or by calling 6409. In addition, spring turkey hunters are reminded that spring turkey licenses will not be mailed out until after hunters purchase a valid 2018-2019 hunting license. All spring turkey hunters, regardless of age, are required to have a general game and habitat license. In addition to their spring turkey license, hunters age 16 and older must also have a small game license or a combination license. Spring turkey hunters are encouraged to purchase their other necessary licenses well in advance, so their turkey tag arrives before the season opener on April 14th. In other news, more than 500 spring turkey licenses remain in 6 units. These remaining licenses are now available on a first-come, first-served basis at the Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov. Hunters can have a maximum of 2 licenses each, and anyone who did not apply in the first drawing is eligible for remaining licenses. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report.
If you haven't experienced the heart-pounding excitement of the spring snow goose season,
you haven't seen the most thrilling waterfowl action possible.
Take that plug out of your gun and chase snows with Mid-Migration Outfitters.
Plus, you'll get to see the spring waterfowl migration up close and personal.
Hunts take place from mid-February through April. Now is the time to reserve your time in the blind.
Visit MidMigrationOutfitters.com for more. That's MidMigrationOutfitters.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit HaybaleHeights.com to book your trip today.
Want to know a great way to enhance the fun and rewards of your own hunt while investing in the future of sport hunting? Babe Winkleman here for the Minnesota DNR and the National Shooting Sports Foundation, suggesting one fine way is to invite a first-timer or inactive hunter along to deer camp this season. It's a wonderful opportunity to pass along a wholesome, challenging, lifelong tradition, sharing quality time with family or friends, support conservation efforts in this fine state, and present the gift of your knowledge and skill to someone special. Best of all, you'll love the feeling of knowing you've made a difference in another person's life who may not have otherwise had the opportunity to go hunting on their own. Still not sure? Then think back to those who nurtured your love of hunting and their sacrifices made on your behalf. Now, isn't that something well worth giving back? Just don't wait too long, because deer season's just around the corner. Invite someone new along this year, show them what hunting is all about, and I promise you'll be awfully glad you did.
Take me fishing. And show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing, so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio, thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. I'm Brett Amundson, and you're thinking to yourself, boy, I'd really love to be a snow goose guide. Sometimes it's a lot of fun. Sometimes it can be a lot of work. We're going to find out a little bit more about what it's like to be a snow goose guide and find out just what's going on with the snow geese right now with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. Tony, it's been a long day.
It's been a long day. It's been a long season.
It's been a long season. It's been a tough season, and we're recording this earlier in the week, so if you're listening to this early in the morning and you're like, long day, what are you talking about? Well, that's what we got to do when we're out here on the road is find time to do things like this, because the life of a snow goose guide is a busy one, right, Tony?
Yeah, there's always work to be done as a snow goose guide. It's kind of a motto that we talk about from time to time, is there's always something to do, and we're always moving, always going.
Right. And I was talking to some of our clients the other day, and you know, with the sunlight, as much sunlight as we're getting now, and the fact that you can hunt a half hour before sunrise to a half hour after sunset, you're talking about laying in the field for 13 some odd hours a day.
Yeah, correct. I don't know what this sunlight stuff that you're talking about is, because we haven't seen it in a couple of weeks, it seems like. But yeah, daylight hours, yeah, it seems it's, yeah, 12, 14 hours, depending on, you know, when we're in and out of the field. Then we get a little break for lunch. Other than that, we're out in the field all day, so it makes for some long sits, but it can be worth it to sit out there all day.
Right, and this weekend, especially some of our listeners in North Dakota, you're thinking, sunshine, what are you talking about? It's still winter up here with the storms that we're getting, and down in the southern part of the region, of course, was probably more rain, and we did have a couple of nice days of 50-degree temperatures and some sunshine here in the middle of last week, but prior to that, Tony, it's been a brutal spring. So I don't even want to call it spring. It's been a brutal late winter around here.
Yeah, this is one of the worst ones that I can think of in a long time when it comes to cold temps, snow and rain and freezing rain and just about everything, you know, that we're not looking to get as snow goose hunters and snow goose guides, especially when we got to put customers on birds and we get, you know, the whole state gets pounded with weather and we just get locked down. Makes for tough conditions, so we're happy to see the sun and some nice days finally.
Most people listening to this show probably understand how it works for snow geese. They follow the snow line up as they migrate up from the southern part of the United States, but other listeners might be going, well, they're called snow geese. Why would snow be a big deal? Snow kind of hinders their northward migration, doesn't it?
Correct. Basically, they're going to stop right at that snow line, and if we get snow, say, where we're hunting, that snow is going to push into the area, and it's going to push them birds out of the area or make them extremely hard to hunt. So, yeah, you'd think snow geese would like snow, but they don't.
Tony Crotty, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Mid-Migration Outfitters. We're talking about the snow goose migration, where it's at right now. And, you know, Tony, I've been guiding with you with MMO for a few years now, and I had a memory come through on my Facebook feed the other day, and it was from, I think it was from 2 or 3 years ago, and it was literally the last day of our guiding season a couple of years ago. And I feel like we're just getting started here in South Dakota.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny. That memory that you had on Facebook was for the same group that's coming in to hunt with us tomorrow. So, and that was our last group of the season. We were just running out of birds, and we were in the northern half of the state. Right now, we're in the southern half, and like you say, we just feel like things are getting good. But we're a couple of weeks behind this year with all the weather that we've had, so it's it'll be good. We'll have a longer season this year, but it's been tough.
Yeah, with all the snow and, you know, frozen lakes in North Dakota, I talked to Lucas Mertens last week here on the show, and he said there was still, I think, 14 feet of ice on Devil's Lake. Maybe give or take 13, 12 feet or something like that. There's a lot of ice up there. A lot of that still got to melt. Of course, we did have some warmer temps, so a lot of snow did disappear, and a lot of ice started to melt, but plenty of ice still on some of those waters, and then more snow, of course, this weekend, too. So it's a slow push. It's a slow migration. I know some guys that wanted to start hunting in North Dakota soon, and we've watched these birds, I don't know how many times, Tony, fly over us to the north, only to turn around and come back and fly south that afternoon.
Yeah, that first week that we were here, we had the snow line about 30 miles north of us. So yeah, they'd fly. They'd come up off the river, and they'd fly north of us, and then they'd feed and turn around and fly right back. So it was just a two-way flight for us every day for about a week. So it's pretty brutal.
It's tough because you're bringing clients out. They're, you know, let's face it, they're paying you to take them out to go hunting, and you're on the birds. There's only so much that you can do, but we know there's a ton of other guys around here. There's other guys that were just fun hunting, and man, when you get stacked up with the adults, there's a reason we like to chase juvies in this game, because they're easier to hunt. Adults are just tough to hunt, and everybody, it seemed like, in this area, and everybody's in this area now in South Dakota, everybody struggled.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, there'll be a group here and there that does good. They'll get into a pocket of younger birds, or they'll just get some luck, or they might have all the stars aligned and they have everything perfect, and they'll get into them. But for most guys, and you know, that comes to guides or freelancers, just about anybody, you get old adult birds and cold weather and snow, it's tough. It makes it just about impossible, and it's just part of the game that we play. You know, we have to deal with it every year.
Tony Crotty, our guest, Mid-Migration Outfitters, guiding snow goose hunts in South Dakota right now here on Sporting Journal Radio. And we finally had seen those adults. We had a couple of days of just huge migration days, some huge pushes there early last week, and we had some warm weather, and then we finally started getting those big spins of juvie birds finally buzzing over the decoys that we've been waiting for. And then what happens? Then north of us gets 8 inches of, well, 8 inches of snow in the forecast anyway. That's perfect, Tony.
Yeah, it's going to just make for another interesting, you know, couple of days for them hunts, and we'll see what happens. It could be good. You know, we could see a pushback of, you know, the medium, or not medium, the mid-run birds, and we could get another shot at them, you know, as them birds, like you say, we had big push days. They pushed right over top of us, never even seen our decoys. We could see them again, and we'll see what happens.
All right, and we, you know, we're planning on running through early April. I think the way things are going, Tony, we could probably hunt these snow geese here in South Dakota till what, like September, October, somewhere in there.
Yeah, they'll probably be birds around a long time.
Jeez. Unbelievable. Well, let's talk about some of those weather conditions a little bit, because sometimes when you get the right conditions, whether it's rain, whether it's snow, sometimes the hunting can be really good. Sometimes it gets really miserable.
Hunting snow geese is sometimes kind of like Canada's or ducks and things like that. If the birds are moving and you have weather, it can be really good. That's the deciding factor. If the birds are going to fly around, they're probably going to be a little dumber than they normally are. Now, most times they kind of hunker down, and, you know, I don't want to be flying in 30-mile-an-hour winds and snow and sleet, and neither do they. But the times that they do, it makes for good hunting.
But realistically, a lot of those older birds seem to be north of us. We're into the birds we like to hunt, and we've actually got some openings coming up for people that want to come out and do some snow goose hunting. And realistically, I think our best days of snow goose hunting are yet to come.
Correct. Yeah, we got some openings, you know, starting next week, which would be the last week into March, and I think we'll be running into the, you know, well into April, depending on what we have for birds. And I agree. I think we're just starting to see the young birds. We just started shooting our first juvies the last 2 days, and it's, you know, there's still reports of birds down in southeast Missouri. So we got good things to come.
Right. I was talking to a friend of mine who kind of follows the migration, and I said, man, he's like, what are you seeing? I said, well, there's been a huge push of, you know, birds coming over the last couple of days. You know, I think we're finally seeing those big wads of adults finally going north. And I said, I think it's going to get really good for us, and I think we could be here for a while. And he goes, yeah, there's birds still in Arkansas right now. You know, when you got 15, 20 million of them, it takes them a long time for them all to come up here.
Yeah, it really does. And this year it's going to be real interesting to see all that plays out. Like you said, that first big mass wave of adults have pushed through. Whether or not we get gapped out in between flights of birds is kind of the big thing. That's the only concern that we have right now. But we'll have birds that are going to be migrating north for the next month, easy. So I think April will be good. And, you know, the guys that are up in North Dakota, I think they'll be shooting them well into late April, hopefully.
Yeah, it's so funny because last year, I think North Dakota opens their snow goose season in the spring around February 17 or something like that. Doug Lear and I always talk about it, and last year was the first time that they actually had snow geese on the opener in North Dakota, February 17. We had those two snowstorms that all pushed back. I mean, it was almost a full month later this year before North Dakota saw those first birds.
Correct, yeah, and it's not going to get any better with this new storm. They're going to come right back, and then they're going to be set behind another week. So it's going to be a long season in North Dakota this year.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's like I always tell people, it's fun to watch the migration. No matter, the hunting can be tough, but I'll tell you what, we're set up on this water spot right now, Tony, and the ducks this spring have put on an absolute show for us.
They really have. It's probably one of the coolest water spots that we've set yet, that I've been on at least. And it's kind of the perfect place to work in just about anything from snows to ducks to Canadas and specs. And we got a big spread out there. And I think your finger's going to be sore from taking pictures by the end of the season.
I know. I think we counted like 10 different duck species the other day while we were out there, and all the different geese, the big ones, the little ones, the ones that sound like they're laughing at you, and of course the white ones and the blue ones are there too. So openings coming up yet here, Tony, for Mid-Migration Outfitters. If people want to come out and hunt with us this year in South Dakota, what should they do?
They can get a hold of me on my website, or just give me a call, or they can get a hold of you.
That's true. MidMigrationOutfitters.com is the website. Tony Crotty, thank you for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Tyler Scott talks youth turkey opportunities. If you got a kid that wants to hunt turkeys, he'll tell you how next.
The ice is strong and the bite is on. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world. Welcome to Lake of the Woods. With over 50 resorts and motels to stay at, Lake of the Woods is a winter destination trip that deserves to be on every angler's list. Bring the family too. Book a fully guided trip in a heated fish house or do it yourself. Don't leave the snowmobiles at home either. The Lake of the Woods area offers hundreds of miles of groomed trails to spend the day on. Come visit the walleye capital of the world. Come visit Lake of the Woods. Plan your trip at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today.
Every year, countless birds and small animals become victims of domestic cats. To keep cats and wildlife safer, the Minnesota Cats Indoors Project reminds you to please keep your cat indoors.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back here, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network on demand at sportingjournalradio.com and, of course, by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. Turkey season, not that far away. We're talking with Tyler Scott right now about getting out there and chasing turkeys around out in the field. And one of the things you had talked about, Tyler, is reaping and crawling on your hands and knees and doing that with a bow now. Of course, you can do that with a shotgun. And you said it kind of depends on the situation. What determines what type of situation? I mean, I suppose it's when you buy your license, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have the license, of course, to go after them. But as far as a situation, what I look for is you got to have the terrain that can play in your favor too. you know, the more you're exposed to those birds, the harder it is. It's kind of ideal if you can get yourself, in my eyes, into within 100 yards without being detected. Because having to come across an entire field exposed, especially if you're hunting with a bow, just because you got a little bit more equipment there, it's a little bit harder to hide. It's easier to get within 100 yards. And once you do get within 100 yards, you know, as a hunter, you always want to avoid skylining yourself. But I tell you what, when you're kind of reaping on these turkeys, if you can just get over that crest and show that top of that fan of that bird, that might be all it takes. And they'll come in, you know, trying to defend their territory, especially if they're with a harem of hens. And so that's kind of the one and only time where kind of skylining yourself can be effective, because you aren't necessarily exposing your entire body, exposing the entire decoy, but you're still sparking the interest of that tom to come in. And then if you can get them to close within shooting distance, hey, that's what it's all about.
When people ask us about waterfowl hunting, and you know, what's one of the biggest pieces of advice you'd give to somebody that wants to go shoot some ducks or geese, we tell them to scout. And scouting is the name of the game, I think, for a lot of things that you want to chase. Mm-hmm. And turkeys, it's pretty important to scout a little bit, isn't it, Tyler?
You know, it is. And if you have experience of hunting these birds in the past in a certain area, it can make scouting a lot easier because you know where these birds are going to be at. You know, but if you're new to the game, if you're new to an area, say you're hunting out of state, you got to find birds because you can't just go on any old property and expect to kill a bird. There's got to be birds there. You know, this time of the year can be a little difficult because those birds are all grouped up. They aren't going very far from roost to where they're feeding, which is typically around farms. But once the snow starts to melt and we get into April, those birds are going to disperse out to their typical breeding grounds. And then you're going to see those toms out strutting around on their strutting fields. You know, if you can get, they love alfalfa fields. Now, of course, April, the fields aren't turning green yet, so they're going to be a little more dispersed on different food sources, old egg fields, whatever have you. But if you can spot that tom, you know there's a bird in the area, in the vicinity. And then if you can spend the time to determine where they're roosting at, that's going to make your job a lot easier trying to get on that bird. So that's getting out there. First light, listening for gobbling on the roost, that's going to be your best bet. But if you're unable to get out there bright and early in the morning, getting out there in the evenings and trying to listen for them gobbling when they're back on roost can also help you determine where those birds are at. Comes down to time and being out, being a field. I mean, that's with anything, just like goose hunting for you guys.
Right. Absolutely. Now, do you use some sort of locator call when you go out there?
You know, I guess I don't. I haven't very much in the past, just because I kind of know where a lot of these birds are roosting. If you find birds roosting in a certain hill or a certain set of timber or whatever have you, these birds are most likely going to roost in these same spots year in and year out. It's really made my job a lot easier, you know, hunting every spring and not having as much time to get out and determine where these birds are roosting at. I can almost count on a bird or a number of toms roosting on a certain hill each and every year. But when it comes to locating calls, you know, there are, you know, owls, owl call, crow call, coyote call, like a coyote howl, you know, anything like that will oftentimes spark a bird to gobble if they're on roost.
Talking with Tyler Scott here, Sporting Journal Radio. Talking about turkeys, as the season's not that far away, and you mentioned when you were talking about scouting, hunting different states and things like that. When you go to different states, like, say, South Dakota, there's places you can go in South Dakota where you can shoot multiple birds. You can go to some of the southern states and shoot multiple birds. When do you think Minnesota will up the bag limit for turkeys?
You know, that's an interesting question, you know, especially when you get into those southern, down the southeast part of the state, those southern units where there's been birds a lot longer than, say, in the northern part of the state. That's a good question. You kind of got me stumped on that. I know in our area, we got a lot of birds where I think, I don't know if I'd say everybody would be granted two tags, but there definitely are congregations of birds where there'd be no problem taking a whole bunch of birds out. I know South Dakota, you can take multiple birds. Nebraska, you can take multiple birds. Actually, a lot of those Midwestern, Southern states, you can take multiple birds.
Now, I know that our turkey history in Minnesota in modern, it's hard to say modern times, but, you know, in the 70s when we did the transplant with Missouri, traded them some rough grouse for turkeys. I know that's not that long ago, but my gosh, I mean, Tyler, there's birds everywhere right now, it seems like.
Yeah, it does. It is amazing to see the rebound and kind of them just take off, especially in the northern part of the state where, you know, just 5 years ago, there wasn't a season in the northwestern part of the state. And all of a sudden, they're giving out a whole bunch of tags. It's amazing how they've flourished. It really is.
Now, they're very hardy birds. They do well in the colder weather, it seems like. Seems like they've adapted to winters in Minnesota without any problem. Is there any way that you can judge going through a winter when you see birds grouped up in a field feeding or whatever? Have you been able to say, I think it's going to be a good spring based on the amount of birds you saw over the winter?
I guess I don't spend enough time watching those birds to determine that or to look at a turkey and say, man, they look like they're really healthy. You know, I suppose their attitudes and their body postures and their kind of the way they react with each other can help tell you that too. But It's a little harder than watching a deer and say, man, they look really healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you watch what the deer herd does, and it seems like year after year it fluctuates based on the winter we've had. Pheasants do the same thing. I really haven't heard that about turkeys.
No, I can't say I have either. Each spring's a little bit different as far as how fast those birds disperse or how many birds disperse to a certain area where one year you had 30 to 40 turkeys, and all of a sudden the next year you have 10. Does that mean that a whole bunch of birds got killed off in that wintering flock, or does it just mean they dispersed to a little bit different area? That's a question I don't really have an answer for, but it does spark some curiosity.
Tyler Scott, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. A few minutes left, and before we wrap up, I want to talk about an event you guys do every year for kids. Tell our listeners what you guys do.
So this will be the seventh year. We've done a youth turkey hunt based out of Pelican Rapids for kids 16 and under. And when I say under, it's kind of a discretion of the parents is where we've kind of left it, because we did have a minimum age at one time, but then kids younger were wanting to get in. So I do leave that 16 and under up to the discretion of the parents, as long as they feel comfortable with their child using a firearm. Hopefully they've used one prior to this event. Again, we take 15 kids, age 16 and under. It's that first weekend of turkey hunting season A. This year is April 21st. That Friday night, prior to, we always have a supper, a meal provided, a couple speakers to speak about turkey hunting. meet and greet with your guides as it is a one-on-one guided hunt. We take out the hunters all day Saturday. You know, in the past, it's been a little bit mixed success. Again, it depends on the weather. But I think everybody calls it a success with how much fun they've had. A lot of most kids either get a shot, get an opportunity, or even get a bird. And so it's a great opportunity to get these kids introduced to the sport of hunting, not just turkey hunting. A lot of these kids don't have an opportunity to get outdoors as much as some of us. And it's a beautiful time of the year. A lot of times, you know, we're the chilly mornings, you know, that 30, 40 degrees and warm up into the 50, 60 degree weather, which is perfect for chasing birds in the spring around Minnesota. So it's a great time had by all. It's a wonderful event.
And it's educational for those kids too. I mean, even if they're not successful, they learn a lot.
100%. It's amazing how much these kids learn in a day of field with these mentors. A lot of these mentors that we have hunted for many years. A lot of them are very experienced turkey hunters. And even if they aren't experienced turkey hunters, they're experienced hunters, which translates to a lot of different sports, as you know. And so it's a great time. We try to get as many new kids involved as we can. Doesn't matter where you're from, whether you're a boy, whether you're a girl. We love getting girls involved. We always have, you know, a number of girls each year, and it's amazing. I think the girls are the better shots than the boys, to be honest with you.
Now, there's no cost for these kids, right? But how do they register for it? How do they get in on it?
So what we've done in the past is we have the kids write up a little, just doesn't have to even to be a long, we call it an essay. That essay could consist of a sentence or two, just telling us why they want to go turkey hunting. You know, whatever the reason may be, send that in. It's sent to me, whether it's my physical address or through an email, just a simple email typed up and sent my way. And then we sit down and we look at all of the entries, and then we choose which 15 kids we think would best be suited to go on this hunt. And then we kind of inform them. It's going to be that first week in April when we'd inform you. And then again, 2 weeks later would be the hunt. Information as far as my information can be found on Facebook. It's on the Minnesota Quality Deer Management Association Facebook page is where it should be found. Otherwise, is there anywhere we could leave it on Minnesota Sporting Journal, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll put it on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page and also at sportingjournalradio.com for sure.
Looking from kids from wherever, no matter what walk of life you're from, please just throw an entry in. And like I say, it says essay, but don't be scared off by that word essay.
Yeah, that makes me nervous. Just makes it sound like school.
Yeah. No, that's not what it's meant for.
Sure. All right. So we'll have that information at sportingjournalradio.com on our Facebook page and also on your Facebook page too. And when again is that deadline for it?
Deadline is April 1st.
Very good. Tyler Scott, well, good luck with the event again this year. Thanks for the turkey hunting tips. Good luck in your turkey season, and thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks, Brett.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.